their own flower on our grave. But remember, while we still can hold that flower, when we still can hold that rose and they give it to us, remember, it got thorns. It got thorns on it. This is what we're feeling right now, people. We're looking at it and we say, oh, Ariga, man, thank you, people. We go over there and how much we praise the government on the things that they give us. But see, what they did is they tried to pull a wool over our eyes. And we began to start feeling it. They gave it to us, smiling, and say, here. And we say, yeah, give it to me. Now we began to say, ouch, we're feeling it. We stop and thinking about it now. And this is the reason that I'm trying to tell or inform some of you. This is the way I feel about a lot of things. And I remember when as a young man in Norwich, given the opportunity to speak, I had nothing to say. But now, as I understand it, as I see it, I began to start speaking and trying to tell my people of what I see. I went away a long time ago without knowing anything. I left, and it was a scary experience to leave to United States or to go down to the military all by myself. You know, I see one sweating Eskimo walking around Seattle airport lost. But that was the experience that I had to deal with. And see, I come back, and I've seen how the Western system functions, how it works. And one of these days, people, we're not going to be able to sit there and able to visit like this and sit there and try to tell us what's happening. Are we going to be the written history of the Inupiaqs that somebody told us so? Before it's too late, we got to sit there and really evaluate the things that are given to us time after time after time. Is that what we do? Is people just keep on, they say, well, I'll come here and we'll make housing for you. But there was one smart man from Gamble went over there, said, the minute they start making our house above the ground, that's when we start getting cold. And he's true about it. That's a true fact, too. When our houses used to be under the ground, it wasn't R19. It was probably R100 because most of the houses were under the ground and we were warm. We didn't have to worry about insulation. Or we didn't have to worry about caulking or winterization and all this other stuff that we try to worry about right now. So the land claims has affected us in many ways. Sometimes it creeps up to us even before we know. And what's happening is that we have to sit there and really stop before it's too late. I know we can sit there and talk about the elders. What have we done to the elders within 13 years since the land claims passed? See, when our children grow up, they're going to become adults and they are going to be fighting. Meaning the regional people that are part of the regional corporation and those people that are not stockholders, they are going to be fighting, the way I see it. The people, because they're going to be jealous, they're going to look at you and sit there and point the finger back at you and say, hey, why was I included? A lot of you can see your own children when they fight. When you give them one, other ones wants it too, right? Especially if you have a lot of children. You always make sure that you try to give everybody. Otherwise, if you don't, you always end up having a fight. And see, this is what I see in the future. And I've seen it from little children. And as we get older and older, what you see there is a fight that's going to happen in the future. And as much as anybody says about this land claims, and as much as experts analyze it, the only one that benefits from this right here is the lawyers and probably the people that have chartering service that have been charting our people for all the meetings. Because, boy, we thought we were rich because they were charting almost every week, you know. See, there are some guys from Nana come around and they want to tell us about our regional corporation. And these are some of the things, the way that I see. And what we got to do is we got to make sure everybody understands the land claims. How many of our board members do know about the land claims? Probably none of them do. Yet we have people in there that are representatives that are supposed to represent us. Sometimes I get worried about it, and especially now I'm getting worried is because every time I see the board members go to a meeting, is that there's a lot of partying that goes on, and you probably know it, and I know it, and everybody is afraid to speak about it. But I'm getting to a situation to where I don't care what I say now, so therefore, I do not want numb brains to run my future anymore. I do not want people that are too hangover to make decisions of the future of myself, the future of my children and their children, and just to let it sit there and say nothing because I'm afraid to sit there and say something. The time is now. We got to get the belt and sit there and tighten it up, or we got to do something, or straighten the act of the people. Because when the time is too late, then we'll all say, well, gee, too bad. It's the best time to do it now. Because what happened is when you take alcohol into your brain, the first place that happened, it numbs your judgment. And if a person drinks all night and try to make the decision for all of us people, he doesn't want to even think about the policies that's been going on. He doesn't worry about that because he's too sick, much less his brain is not working, functioning right anyway by now because he's been drinking all night. How many of those do we have in our board members? And see, the land claims has affected us in many ways. Some of us, it benefits some of our people, but some of us, right now, we're waiting for a dividend check. That's the first time I've seen how the white man subsists. Is that what he does? He go over there and he get his money. He go to the store and he cooks. That's a white man's subsistent lifestyle. If you look at the Inupiaq subsistent lifestyle, the way we live traditionally, it takes approximately 33 steps to do that. So there it is, what I see, or what the way I see the land claims has affected us. And there's more other things that I can get into, but I don't want to hug the mic at this time. This is what I'd like to welcome to the Arctic as well. And everybody welcome you from different areas of of Kotzebue.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
My name is Ross Schaefer. I'm from Kotzebue. I've been raised and born here. I spent about 9 years out for school. I, as Bob mentioned earlier, I'm in the same age group as Bob. We were in high school, and soon after high school, in college, or I was in college and Bob was in the Army. And the land claims at that time in the 71 was being decided by several of our leaders and by the Congress. And it has become evident to this day that the native peoples of our region and all of Alaska had very little say in terms of how that particular law was passed. And restrictions and the decisions in that particular law. The leadership of the Native people at the time saw the opportunity for some sort of a land settlement, and they grabbed at it. And so we end up with a particular law that we are currently living under, which I believe was made for our corporations to completely fail in a few years. the land conveyances through ANCSA, I believe, are to the corporations. They're not to the people. The people are only shareholders in the corporations. We have, since the passage of the Land Claims Act, we had forced upon us a new definition of land use and ownership. The people in this area, as well as in most other villages in the state, who live off the land, used all aspects of the land. They camped in certain areas, and when they camped there, other people respected that particular campsite. Maybe next year you wouldn't be there, so somebody else would be there. This new definition with native allotments and federal lands, state lands, corporate lands, has brought many problems to our areas. At one time, we used all of the land. People lived off the land. When you travel up the NOTAC and you hunt with the NOTAC people, you find certain names of certain places where our people had traveled for thousands of years, same way up the Kobuk. And everybody used that land. And we followed the game and utilized the land to feed our own people. And I remember when I was a young man, my dad hunting, traveling up to the North Slope to hunt caribou. Some years the caribou didn't come through Kotzebue. To this day, I know myself, I've traveled up Onion Portage. I've traveled the Upper NOTAC. I traveled the February Mountains in the Selwick area, the Buckland Mountains, the Kewalik Mountains, pursuing game, mostly caribou, which we subsist on almost totally. So we use all of the land. Now, when the land claims came about and allotments were being applied for, I know of fights over particular parcels of land where families and other peoples used to share. And you shared a piece of land, that means you camped right next to somebody else, maybe a few feet, maybe a few hundred yards, and you shared that land and the berries and the game that is on it. With the native allotments, people started fighting over these lands. Some people come up to somebody and say, hey, you're on my native allotment. You shouldn't be on it. So we have a problem in land definition. And this new definition was forced upon us. And it's an ugly definition. It goes contrary to our native values, which is sharing and utilizing all of the land. I would like to say a little bit on subsistence. We not only utilize all of the land for subsistence, but we also use the oceans, the seas. We have before us now a petition to bring about state management of our resources in the oceans. And the federal government is the only government at this time that can discriminate, that can say only these certain peoples can utilize these certain types of animals. And the state government cannot do that. The state government has to say that everybody can utilize the animals. And I think that the native peoples in this area should really think hard on making a decision to go to state management of our marine resources. If we go to the state, then the state opens up these resources to everyone. However, if we stay with the federal government, then we have sole use of these resources. Our subsistence rights are very important and dear to all of us, because even to this day, Most all of us depend on caribou. Right now they're getting sheafish, tomcod, and whitefish in all these areas here. And most of this food is to eat. Some of it is for the dogs. Recently we were out seal hunting. We'll be out again this winter. And this subsistence, this use of the land, must be for all natives in this region. At the AFN convention, they talked about setting up land banks so that our lands can be put into a separate entity or a corporation or co-op, whatever, so that our lands won't be taxed and that we would not lose them after 1991. If a land bank is instituted, then I see that if we had provisions that all this land be open to all our native peoples, then I can see that kind of a organization working. Because eventually, if we have certain village or regional corporations that are doing poorly, not making any profit, then eventually they may end up losing their lands, and I would hate to see that. I think that all natives, even after 1971, should be a part of the land settlement. Eventually, we're going to be gone. We all get old and we all die. Some of our stock will go to some of our children, and some of it won't. I hate to see some of our future leaders, because eventually we'll end up with some super good leaders that won't be part of our native corporations. We're not going to be here forever, and we have to make some allowances to make sure that these people share in what we have, because our native value, one of our most important values, is sharing. And this, I agree with Bob Mullock when he stated earlier that the land claims has split us apart in that way. We're a people that work together, that live together, that shared food together, that hunted together, and we should continue in this way. If we don't continue in this way, then we're going to lose our identity as Native peoples, because we're a culture that was a very extended family. We were a close-knit group. Now, with the cash economy and the new definitions of land ownership and land use, people tend now to not share as much as they used to. And I would hate to see us continue in that way. I don't know if I have anything else to say. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer.
My name is Bobby Wells, and I'm in Inupiaq, and I'm speaking because I am affected, and where I am affected is from the village. I remember our fathers, our forefathers, how they survived in this world. In strong winds, in cold temperatures, many of them die during a season. But they survived through thousands of years because they knew how to survive. They were taught to share. They were taught to help each other for thousands of years. And today, we are in this same situation, but this time we're not surviving against nature, against surviving from the land. But this time, we're in a time where we're searching, we're fighting to survive among different people, among different races. In this Western civilization, what does this Western civilization have to offer? Business. Not only business, but like regional corporations. And today, that's what the Inupiaq needs to concentrate on, is to learn to own and operate our own businesses. If we want to speak, if we want to be strong, and I am speaking mainly to inspire. I don't have any answers, but as an Inupiaq, I'm speaking where I am affected. And today I am from the village, and from the villages there's people who's having a hard time trying to survive today. Just like in the past, it was hard for them to survive in the land, but today, now they're trying to survive in economy. And that's where we need to learn. What Robert Mullock said a while ago is we need to unite. And I think that is what we need to do. What we need to do is go to where the people are hurting. Go to where they need and look and see. It's out there in the villages. It's here in Kotzebue. We have a need. And we need to unite. And businesses, that's what we need to have too. We need to learn to own and operate our own businesses. And that's where we get our freedom of speech. It's because we own something and we operate it. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wells.
My name is Dolly Garza. I am a Haida Tlingit from Ketchikan. I have been living in Kotzebue for a year and a half. I am a member of Sea Alaska Corporation. In addition, I am a board member on my village corporation. I have been to several of these hearings and have listened to what the people have to say. And now I finally feel I should speak. And the one thing I would like to speak about is corporations and what they have done. And as it has been sounded, they have split us in many fractions. As Evelyn Conwell stated, the corporations do not effectively represent the natives because they are a profit-making entity which is totally alien to our way of being. And it's hard to say whether or not they will ever effectively represent the natives. But they are viewed by outsiders, by white men, by Congress, to be the representation of natives. And this is unfortunate for us. One of the things that corporations has done, it has split the native leaders from the people. I remember in the past, Native leaders came from the people. When there were problems, communities would get together and discuss the problems. And there would be someone in that group who could understand the problems and would be willing to go forth and fight for the people. And those became our leaders. Now we have corporations. When government wants to know what natives think, it is most easiest to call on corporation board members or administration. These board members and administrative personnel no longer get their input from the people. They do not go back to the people and ask you, what are your concerns and what are your needs and how can I help you? They were not sent by the people. They merely go and they say they represent us. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they do not. And I think this is most noticeable in the area of subsistence, because many of the regional corporations' profits are based on resource development. There are many rural communities which may be affected adversely by this resource development. And while these regional corporations and these native leaders say that they are addressing those rural needs, they may be in face, but they are not wholeheartedly like they did in the days before ANCSA, when those leaders came from the people. And this, to me, is a major problem. Because we, as natives, if we continue to live under these corporations, we must understand that they may not be our representation, and we must form again our own coalitions and seek our own leaders, not ones that were chosen by white men organizations, but ones that were chosen by the people. The last thing that I would like to discuss on what organizations have done is that they have split the young people from the older people. They have created closed stock. I am a young woman and I am not married, but I hope that someday I will be happily married and I hope to have many children. And I do not feel that my children should be denied of the rights that I now hold. If my friend who is native has two children, those children have potentially 50 votes or 50 stocks, 50 shares. If I'm lucky and if I have five children, my children will only have 20 stocks each. I think, as it has been voiced by many others, this should not separate us and that children should be continued to have the right that we now hold. It's something that was discussed at AFN, and two of the options were to allow stocks to be distributed to all children. The other option was to allow each corporation to choose whether or not they would open their stocks. And that made me sad to think that was even an option, to think that natives would deny their own children that right. And I hope that we as natives are never that greedy, because I know when our grandmothers and our grandfathers fought for the Settlement Act, they had no intentions of leaving us out. And we should never have the intention of leaving our children out. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Esther Norton. I want to explain and say a few things about how I grew up. I'm a grandma and great-grandma. I have lots of children, but the lack of food long ago, there were no caribou in town. When the reindeer was wiped out and some run away to north, I'm married to a reindeer herder's son, but they lost their herd, thousands of herds long ago. I'm from Selwick and I grew up at Nervik. And when the food was scarce, I go down to store and bought about 14 ounces of meat in a little can, and I cook a pot of rice and I stir that meat into rice. Somehow, no vegetable in it. I have eight children, So I divide that food. My husband went to the sites everywhere during the war. He never stayed home many times. And I fish and I try to feed my children. And now we have lots of dogs because there's no snow going in those days. And when I could remember, we was at Narvik area. I know my grandma, she was still alive. She used to cook sourdough, include fish, liver, and suwak, eggs. And from morning to midnight, no matter what time, they stay up late fishing, working, lots of mosquitoes, smoke there. Fishes were just like in a jungle, grow up. No white food around because we're in a camp. That's the way we survive, and they were survivor. I'm the one. We few of us only survived before the hospital in Narvik. We are 16 children, but few of them start surviving. Start from me. I'm the oldest in girls, and my dad used to hunt, and we got no money. We used to hang some muskrat skin through the nose when they start rotting because my mother can't keep up because she has to hunt too. She skinned 200 muskrat before the sundown. And we help her and my dad dried some skins. That's how I remember. We start to chew roots when rhubarbs are kind of sprout out from the ground. We start having greens with those, and my grandma told me that's some of the roots of the branches, like blueberries. Beside the blueberries, there's nothing, something else that grows beside blueberries too. Their roots are good for stomach. For bad stomach, she let us chew those because there's no medicine. My mother don't know about aspirin, so she lose lots of children, maybe headache too, from headache. And I see lots of people, they live on the fur. They caught fur and they trade from the stores. That's how they support us. Cloth parkas and blankets and what they need. My dad was a boat builder and sled maker, and he makes no shoes too. That's why he trade in, brings some parkas for mother and us. And one time some man came in and he said, let me buy a boat. It was nice built boat that has a sail. And I don't know what's going on, but I learned later that my dad only have a blanket and a shotgun, and here his nice boat go. I thought my dad was a naughty one because I never see no money. And he said he buy a reindeer out somewhere. He even never eat one, I think, but when we were at Candle, that was at Deering, that guy live in Deering. We only ate two reindeer. So one time I was so proud, my daddy have a 50 cents, and I go out and brag up to my little girlfriends. I said, you know what, my dad has 50 cents in there. I'm so proud Papa have 50 cents. That's how we have no money in those days. And when I start working, I work for 60 cents a day. That's how we start hunting. I hunt when I was 12 year old. Everybody knows me here, I hunt even now. I fish. I'm a commercial fisherman. I'm old. I fish 10 years. That's how we try to help any other way, this way. So they start to give us allotments, and I thought that's a smart thing to do. At last, we have allotments now. I never see what's going to happen that time. And here we will start restricted. We have to stay in our allotments only. There's something going on like that. And we don't see much ahead. Now we're learning what's ahead. We're learning. We're restricted. My parents, great-grandparents were from Selwick area, and they have lots of sites up there. I know where Mama, mother grew up. I know the place. And here, when she's become a young lady, I know where she is. It's way up there. And I know their camping places. I only choose two places for my youngest son and my sister's son because they live in the States. That's the only two places we choose out of lots of campsites up there. And here, my husband let me choose one little allotment around here, and my two sons, they pick one each. That's all we have. My husband even have no allotment. And that's all we have. And then here I have 21 grandchildren, and great-grandchildren is 5, and I don't know how they're going to make out. There's lots of land out there. Their grandpas from my husband's side have lots of campsites, but we're not allowed there. We'll learn later. We're restricted. My husband is restricted. We have a little trouble there, but I'm not mentioning it now because we have talked to one of the National Park Service already. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Rick. First of all, I'd like to express my gratitude for your being here and all the hard work you've done throughout the state of Alaska as far as asking viewpoints as to how ANCSA has affected our lives and subsistence and the others. First of all, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Talor Naktok. And for the sake of not having you mispronounce my name, you can call me Bobby Curtis.
Okay. It's a deal.
Okay. I sit on the Kotzebue IRA board here. I'm a council member of the Native Village of Kotzebue. And on behalf of our government, we welcome you to the Native Village of Kotzebue. In my view, I would think that ANCSA is a blessing in disguise. I can recall at the time when it passed, I was just 14 years old at that time, and I thought that we as collectively, as I thought, we all collectively went out and sought and we gained an amount of land and some monies to go with it. So during that day, I thought that it was quite a that we did quite well. Although throughout the years, I've come to realize, from my standpoint of view, that ANCSA was certainly a blessing in disguise. Speaking in terms of corporations, a form not of governmental status, subject to state statutes, is by no means a vehicle to our cultural salvation. In essence, it was a direct assault by the federal government to, number one, segregate natives, number two, terminate trust responsibilities, and number three, assimilate all native people of Alaska into the mainstream of the Western society. It's not to say that this Western society is bad and evil. I've certainly met a number of good friends that that I like. It's just that I would choose, and I remain to be a distinct people. I intend on striving to pass on our culture and our identity, and hopefully I would be allowed to do so without any interruption. As far as the federal government is concerned, I think the closest that the federal government can come into redeeming itself is to allow the retribalization of lands, and which in my view would enable us to continue to exist in this region as Inupiat. And we've all known that we had quite an issue that's been going around concerning the state and tribal and IRA governments, the issue of sovereignty. I claim to own Aboriginal rights. I claim to be sovereign. So in my view, all that realization has to start happening with every individual. And I claim to have a government. And and I do plan on asserting our sovereign powers as a distinct government. And again, I thank you very much for being here, and thank you very much.
Ms. Curtis.
Thank you.
I think so.
There's coffee, and down the hall a little ways is a smoke room. I think we take about a 10-minute break, and then we can come back for other people that would like to stretch.
Okay, thank you, and don't go away though. We'll just have a cup of coffee.